Hi Max, you're very welcome to Capricorn TV. It's an honour to meet you today.
Thanks for inviting me on. It's an honour to be here.
Yeah, it's great to kind of coincide in London at the same time. And you know, Max, there's a few ominous things I'm going to talk about today. Gaza, Israel, Palestine conflict. I'm going to talk about that probably towards the end of the interview. But you've inspired me to look into a lot of topics, Max. I think the first thing I told you on the radio show before was I came across Earth's Forbidden Secrets, the book you wrote a long time ago. But I was kind of in that genre as well. But I'm kind of similar to yourself, Max, and I like to research things. I like to know about things. And if it's truth-orientated, that's what I want to know. That's what I want to pursue. And I guess that kind of sums you up in the genre, truth-orientated, truth-seeking. Max, yeah?
It's always seeking. You've got to be worried when you think you've discovered it. You know? I mean, you discover certain truths, but it's always open to suggestion. You know?
I think the main thing that you have gravitated towards, Max, is humanitarian causes, anti-war activism, or plain, simple humanitarianism and serious issues, Max. There's serious issues on this planet at the moment. I know you're touching on a lot of them. I think probably the first thing to talk about is, you know, this whole, I think 9/11 is probably one crux of the whole life-changing events of many people and awakening on this planet, as is the recession, the global recession. So maybe we could talk about debt slavery, something like that, Max, to see where, you know, that's maybe wakened a lot of people up.
Well, the fact that we do live in a situation of debt slavery is people farming. What we've got here, you know, manufactured debt slavery by the money system. The money system's the head of the snake. I've been saying this for years. If we can cut the head off the snake, then we'll remove the control system. I mean, just the fact that these people have got access to as much money as they want, like unlimited money. Think about that. Unlimited money. And for every dollar you spend, they can beat you a billion to one. You know, and they can do that every day.
Yeah.
So it's a tough apple to bite into, you know, and it's a tough nut to crack. Money is the root of everything. The control of the money system is the cause of all of these problems. And people don't realize that they live in a system of manufactured debt slavery. But they do. Nobody ever asks why they have to pay to be alive. They just take it for granted. Money is one of the most taken for granted issues in our society. It really is. People just don't think about it. They don't think about where it comes from. You know, and it's the fact of where it comes from and how it's laundered out of our control. See, all money is created by us. There's all of this fiction about the money system, fractional reserve banking and all this sort of stuff. Money is actually created by us. We create money ourselves when we take out loans. And what the banks do is they launder it back into their possession. So they launder what we create into their possession and they charge us money to do so, which is a bit of a scam.
Yeah.
But that's the head of the snake, and that's one of the main things we have to address. That's something I've been talking about very, very much for years, the money system, because it is the head of the snake.
Of course, planetary resources on this planet, we got gold reserves, oil reserves. This is what really war is all about. Even Afghanistan, I think a lot of people talk about the lithium deposits there, and that's another reason they went into Afghanistan. It's always some sort of a natural resource that people are trying to rape or pillage, or, you know, that's really the root cause of everything. And it's another form of money at the end of the day.
Well, it is. It is. The biggest natural resource on the planet is humanity. I mean, we're the ones who rip all this stuff up and believe we need all this stuff, and we're the ones who believe that we own parts of the planet and own this stuff. We're the natural resource that's been harvested more than anything. But you're right. I mean, it's about possession. We think we own all this stuff and we need all this stuff and we don't. And we build everything in order to support this economic model. It comes back to the money system again. You know, like because we've got to support a capitalist society and an economic model which needs permanent growth, then we need to trash everything in the planet. We make everything to break so we can keep making it, because it's no good making things to last. It doesn't support the economic model. So following these parameters, what we're basically doing is going into these countries, killing lots of people, stealing all the resources and turning it into rubbish. That's all we do, is we turn it all into landfill and rubbish, because none of it lasts. We make everything to be breakable. So it's a completely ridiculous situation.
It's not a good situation, Max. It's
ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. We're doing everything. We're destroying our habitat and destroying our lives and destroying the place where we live in order to support these numbers on a screen, and it's just fiction.
how do, you know, we're born into this, we're enslaved into this in a way, Max. You know, we don't really, in a way, I say in the Western world, we don't get a choice. You know, you wake up and you're born and you go through education system and you're told you need an education, you're told you need your degree, and you're in the first world and it's great because you think you're above everybody else and you gravitate away from the people in the second and the third world as a class system. Because the biggest class system is the first, second and third world. You know, and this is what we're taught in the Western world. How do we in the Western world gravitate away from that? I mean, I'm guessing people in the Amazon, you know, that don't have a money system, that live out of the jungle and the rainforest, the ones that are getting destroyed, you know, it's easy for them to defend their position when there's no money system there. But how do we gravitate away from that money system, Max? Is there any practical solution?
Well, we've got to take control of the money system again. We've got to put it back in the hands of the people where it should be, and get rid of this debt slavery. Most of it is contrived debt and taxes and all this sort of stuff. So we need to get away from that. Actually, I went to a meeting last night which was all about that, which I found quite interesting, a group called the Reset. And, you know, people look at all this stuff and say, oh, this is the New World Order. You know, I went to meet the people, and what they're basically talking about is a constitutional reset. It's a referendum. We institute a publicly instituted referendum, and we put forth that we just want a 1% sales tax on everything, and that's it. That's the only tax. Abolish all the other taxes because we don't need them. Because all we've got in the situation at the moment is the situation where about 66% of every dollar you spend, every pound that you spend, is tax. You know, about 66% of what you spend goes on tax. And we could abolish all of that. And while you're doing that, the corporations aren't paying any taxes. So, and these have massive amounts of turnover. So if they knocked all the taxes off the normal people and put it down to every purchase you make, there's just 1% added to it, and that goes straight to the treasury, then we abolish all of these other taxes. We actually end up with more money in the coffers than what we have now, because there's all of these corporations that have found loopholes. And a lot of the politicians create the laws in order to support the corporation, you know. So we need to take control of the financial system, and that's only going to be done through public effort. Everything I've been talking about on the shows has been about unity, public unity and community, putting common unity back in community. Once we can do that, we can take the ship of state in any direction we want. That's the thing. We don't even need to construct a new system. There's a lot of people presenting new systems to us, such as the Ubuntu system, which could be great. Could be great, working in a world with no money and all of this sort of stuff. But you're not going to get people to step out of this reality and into that reality.
I had Michael Teller on the show, and I like the idea of it, Max. I like the idea of Ubuntu.
It's a great idea. It's a great idea, and it would be a very workable system, but how are you going to get people to do it?
Is it practical?
You need a stepping stone from that. So the stepping stone, I believe, one of the first stepping stones is to take control of the money system ourselves, which means taking control of our governments ourselves. And again, this isn't going to happen until we put common unity back in the community. So all of my shows have been focused on this. It's the heart. You've got to change your perspective and change how you apply that to the world and how you interact with people. Once we do that, the system has to change with us. Things like Ubuntu, I mean, it's a great idea, but you're not going to get people to step into it because it's too alien. You need to have a stepping stone. So that's what I'm trying to do is work to create some sort of a stepping stone, you know what I mean?
Awareness and education is the key then, Max.
It is.
How do you teach somebody awareness? Surely it's something you either have or you don't. I always believe it's something you have or don't. Maybe you can gradually kind of help you. At least if you educate somebody, you give them the evidence. You know, maybe they become aware, maybe they don't.
Well, a lot of it is people aren't aware of themselves. People judge themselves by artificial parameters that are given to them by society. And they're not aware of who and what they are. That's the big problem. You know, everything that I've been... all of the talks that I do, a lot of the main message has been for people to rediscover themselves. And every talk that I've done since I've been out, like the talk I did at Boom, the talk I did at Bristol last night, most of it was focused on knowing who and what you are, because once you really understand what you are, suddenly you view the world differently and you become empowered and you have the ability to act. You know, because that's what divides us. That's what divides us, and that's the basic awareness that people don't have. Once they have that awareness, then they think they're open to other things. You know what I mean? But they've got to have that awareness of who and what they are in order to even want to apply themselves to the world. People have no confidence in themselves. They give up on themselves, and they think that they're not worth anything, or they're lesser people because they haven't gained these certain layers or levels on the economic ladder or the social ladder. And it's all fiction. You know, all you've really got to do is rediscover yourself and the whole world changes. It has for me, and it has for all of the people who've come to my shows.
Mm.
I've had so many people come up after the talks and say, wow, I feel different now.
Mm.
And now I feel like I want to act and I feel empowered to act and I'm going to go home. I'm going to start putting all this into practice.
Were you always awake, Max, or did you become awake because of an event, or is it?
I was always awake. I was awake when I was four. You know, I was awake. I was walking around in the yard when I was four.
Asking questions.
This is all messed up. You know, this is not the way the world should be. Right. But I, like many people, just found a way through and found a little bubble outside of society where I could live and I was comfortable there and I didn't worry about it. Okay, I can't help the world. I'm just in this bubble and it works for me and I can get through.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of research on the site because I had the ability to do so. I had the time to do so. Mm. I had the interest to do so. I'd always been interested in what was actually going on.
Sure.
But I'd never really thought that I could do anything about it. And then when 9/11 happened, I started to realise how serious it was and that I could do something about it because I'd managed to survive on the outside of society for 40 years.
Sure.
So I thought, well, I can help other people discover this information. And indeed, you've got an obligation to, once you become awake and aware, you've got an obligation to spread the information to other people. You know, the thing is, a lot of people weren't born awake and aware. There was a moment in your life when that little light bulb went off.
Mm.
So that means that that was information that came from outside, which caused you to wake up. So, therefore, you have the ability to wake other people up with the same information. But you've got to be careful how you do it. Too many people tell people the truth, say, this is the way it is, you have to believe this. You can't do that. No one will accept you telling them what reality is.
Yeah.
You have to sort of open the doorway for them so they can discover things for themselves, because the real truth is realized. It's never told.
I think, you know, obviously setting aside the truth behind 9/11 and the horrendous, repugnant act that it was, I think it was a psychological gift to a certain number of people in that it made us awake and aware. I think life is confronting sometimes through events, and even it might be something like there was global recession, I think a lot of people are waking up to the banksters, these gangsters, these banking cartels, you know, and it's because it's hitting them. They're having to confront their own, you know, lack of food on their table, you know. And when, I think when life is confronting, that's another way for people to become awake and aware.
Well, it is. And 9/11 was the biggest false flag in history. And they really shot themselves in the foot with it. They really did, because they woke so many people up. They created so many activists. And, and it's phenomenal what's happened since 9/11.
Yeah, I look for something positive in everything. And that's one thing I do look for. I think there's something positive in every, even in the negative situation. I think, you know, if it's at a funny time as well, because the internet age was just at the right crucial stage for that to be explored, you know, privately and with a freedom of speech on the internet, you know?
Well, they did. They shot themselves in the foot, and it was the hugest event, and it's caused to awaken so many people. And everything they do is like that. I mean, every problem that we face is an opportunity to address the problem. Problem is, people wake up to the main system. They wake up to the fact that they're controlled and all of this control system exists, and they find it too daunting. They don't know what to do about it. They think they've got to fill out forms and all of this sort of stuff. And they just find it too confronting, and they switch off. They don't want to know. That's the biggest problem, is that people don't feel they can do anything about it. But they can. They can. We all can. And the biggest problem, and everything I've looked at, all the problems I've tried to fix, I always had these huge, huge goals I set for myself.
Sure.
I want to save the Amazon, you know. It didn't happen, you know. Still working on it, but didn't happen.
Sure.
There's been so much stuff go on in Peru now, which is like, I'm trying to raise, I wanted to raise like $1 million to buy this section of one particular section of jungle, which is, under threat for the Huey Toto people, and put them as custodians of it and show what we could do.
Yeah.
Since then, the Peruvian government has spent about $75 million advertising a gas project they're going to do there. And this is a multi-billion dollar gas project. So it doesn't matter whether you buy the land, they'll come in and destroy it anyway. That's the problem. So again, it comes back to this economic model, and it comes back to empowering the community. All of these things are symptoms. They're all symptoms of our disempowerment, which is what allows the government to do what they do. And we've forgotten that these people are simply trustees that we employ to manage our infrastructure for us. We view them as rulers because we've been educated to think that. You know, education is a huge part of it. People go and get education, but they don't get educated. They get trained, they get indoctrinated into this society.
I think that's the thing. Education is an indoctrination, especially this part of the world. You're told your degree is your route out of this, you know, to be above everybody else and put you higher in the class system. And, you know, it's a separation. It's a sectarian state I'm blind.
It is, and your degrees basically put you in debt for the rest of your life. The way they've got it set up, you've got to pay for these degrees, and the government is happy to finance it for you because then it puts you in debt.
Yeah.
And you start off your life, you go to the workforce, and you've already got this huge debt hanging over you for the promise of a job that you're not likely to get because there's so many other people that want that. And that's not really what it's about anyway. You know, we spend our lives working for somebody else in order to collect this paper that we believe we need to be alive. And it separates us from the abundance of the earth, and it separates us from ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest part about it. You know?
I think we spoke before, the Ecuadorian government said, you know, if you want to save the rainforest, buy it. Like, you know, are they any different? Is Peru any different to Ecuador? Is there South American countries willing to work differently?
Well, you know, there's a lot of... Peru's unfortunately run by bribery. I mean, there's a lot of Amazon in Ecuador as well. And, yeah, you could buy it, but they're going and destroying it anyway. Some of the sections that I found in the Amazon, they actually go out, they cut these roads out into the jungle from these little back villages, and they go out there and they clear thousands upon thousands of acres. There's one section we found was about 40,000 hectares of illegal clearing right in the middle of the Amazon that you can't even get to. And there's a tiny little road in there, and they bring in these Chinooks, and they drop bulldozers in and cranes, and they build all these structures, and they plant palm oil, and then they process it all there, and then they lift it up in helicopters, and they take it out. And that's the thing. You don't even know they're there half the time.
Tell us about the danger of palm oil, because that really does ruin it. And that ruins...
Well, it ruins the soil. It destroys the soil, and it's in all of the products that we buy, all the soaps and all of this sort of stuff. So, again, it comes down to us. We've got to be aware of what we're buying, be aware of what we're participating in.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
People just go for what's cheapest, and you know, that's the way it is, because they're all trapped into this economic model, you know. Everyone's looking for an easy way out, so they're not willing to support things that may cost them more. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a real problem.
My Aussie mate, Dan, he was telling me yesterday he bought natural spring water with fluoride in it.
Yeah, yeah.
That must be naturally put in, right?
How can it
be natural with fluoride in spring water?
Well, fluoride does occur naturally, but it's calcium fluoride. It occurs naturally. And it's quite harmless. That's fine. Mm. It's the sodium fluoride that they put in there that they add to it that is the problem. You know?
Wow.
But what are you buying natural spring water with fluoride in it for? I mean, aren't we buying these bottled waters to get away from all the chemicals they're putting in the stuff?
Sure.
Now they're putting in the bottled water as well. So,
now, it's a horrendous infrastructure we're in, Max. It's horrendous. What's the practical thing for people out there listening, Max? What can they do? Is it as simple as, you know, reading the labels on the products, being aware, being vigilant? You know, is that step one? Is that the step one on the
product? Well, you'd be aware of what you're buying, be aware of what you're participating in, but build ties in your community. That's the most important thing we can do. You know, all these communities could all have gardens. You could all have community gardens in your places. Even if you're the only one with a big backyard, you know, someone who has got a big backyard, even if you can't get money off the council, why not open it up as a community garden and get people involved? You know, that would really, really help. You know, freeze people from the economic model, get some back in contact with the earth. And I've been starting these ideas in Australia called the UIC, the Urban Agricultural Cooperative, where you put in market gardens and actually start your own bank in your own community.
Because
if you can start your own bank, even if we've got to use their money, we start our own bank so we can get interest-free loans, or at least loans at 1% from our own bank.
Mm-hmm.
And that would help. Free yourself from the economic model that way.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we're using their paper, well, we'll use our banking system. You know, we've got to get out of this central banking system. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of what the war on terror is about. It's just going out so the IMF can control all these countries, put central banks in all these countries, you know.
They really promote this idea of nationalism, Max, you know, that it's like an operating system, 2.0 or whatever, you know. It's like... They encourage nationalism.
Well, yeah, nationalism, I mean, you know, it's nice to be proud of your country and be proud of your place where you're born, but don't believe that your country is better than everywhere else in the world, you know, like patriotism, you know. Mm. We're better than you, and if you don't like us, we're going to go and bomb you. That's ridiculous, you know.
Mm.
And again, it comes back to this whole ownership and control of resources and all this sort of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Nationalism is like a disease. I just don't agree with it. I mean, I don't agree with borders and boundaries and all this sort of stuff. In a perfect world, we wouldn't have them.
Mm-hmm.
In a world that we've got now, well, where everyone's you know, open to this economic model and they're struggling and trying to, you know, get one up on everybody else, then it's going to exist and it's going to continue to exist.
Mm-hmm. There's one thing we spoke about before is the psychopathology in politics, you know, and it's yourself and Tom Sheridan and a few others have really alerted me to the psychopathology out there of politicians, and there really is no other word for these guys, Max, because...
No, well, they're psychopaths, they are. That's the problem, you know, only psychopaths want to be in control. You know, no one who wants the job of leader is suitable for the position. That's the truth of the matter. You know, reluctant leaders are much better, you know, because, I mean, who wants to control other people? But the problem is that when you've got a psychopath who does get into control, and that's what they do, they climb over each other, they claw over each other to get in control, then their morality becomes the morality of the government, becomes the morality of the system over which they preside. And this is for governments, for corporations, or anything, you know. And you find that all these people are psychopaths, you know. You just look at the world. Of course they're psychopaths. You know, look at what they do to people. Some of, you've got some businesses in London here where the CEOs of the businesses get 31 times the wage of the workers in the businesses. This is outrageous, you know. Only psychopaths would want that or, you know, need that. Why do we need to exploit each other this way and do the things that we do? And why do we allow people to suffer in order to support this economic model? You know, people come and throw you out of your house because you haven't paid your mortgage, and they're upset that you're going to starve and die on the street and freeze, you know. But they go, oh, I haven't got a choice because it says here the books aren't balanced. This is psychopathic thinking. It's pathological thinking. But it's been indoctrinated into them because they believe the economic model is what it's all about.
You have this illusion of freedom as well, that we think we're voting in a political system, but it's, as I say, it's the two-party dictatorship, the reds and the blues, the lefts and the rights, the Democrats and Republicans. And
it is. It's the same agenda. It doesn't matter who you vote for. If you vote, you're really supporting organized crime. It's a criminal system. I don't vote at all because there aren't any suitable candidates to vote for.
Of which the psychopaths percolate to the top of the system.
Exactly. Well, they claw over each other to get there. See, we get to vote for people. We don't get to select who we vote for. They're selected for us by the party. And it's whoever's going to toe the corporate line that they put there for us. And it's just a new face to the same coin. It doesn't matter who you vote in, Liberal, Labor, Tories, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's all the same agenda. It keeps moving forward. Nothing ever gets better for the people. It doesn't matter who you vote in. Because it's the political system that's at fault. You know?
I do think we have a new wave, a new generation of young people that are more aware of this two-party dictatorship. And I'd like to think it's going to start changing, where people are going to stop voting them.
It is. It is. It's all falling apart for them. It is. They can't maintain it. They really can't. I mean, the economic crash, I believe, is really coming. There's no way they can sustain this system. You know, they've just got to try to control the people while it crashes is the difficult part. But there's no way it can be sustained. And the more they do to lock us down, the more people they wake up. It's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, we're too creative. We keep shifting the goalposts. You know, they try to control us, and we just don't go along with it. So,
wow. You know, Max, 9/11 was a big thing for me because at that point I was, you know, I became aware of the slogan of conspiracy theory because that's what they love to throw out. And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm an engineer. I come from an engineering background. I'm looking at the engineering evidence and, you know, it's the best thing I have to kind of present people with evidence. Like, you know, and it's, I like to articulate what really went on that day to give them an idea. However, for me, it's like I look, although I have all that and I look at the pilot's evidence as well, and I like to articulate that too, but, you know, I also look at everything from behind the scenes. You know, why, what was their motive, what was their reason? And sometimes people need to see the motive because they go, well, why would they do that? And they would just blindly ignore the most obvious evidence sitting in front of them, buildings coming down with controlled demolition or whatever. They will just ignore it because they haven't got an engineering or scientific mind. They have a moral questioning mind. It's the motive for 9/11. I mean, is this to create a Muslim war? Was it to, you know, to get rid of this trillion of dollars of, was it a multitude of things?
It was to create the war against Islam is what it was about. If you really look at the evidence of 9/11, all roads seem to lead to Israel. You know, and Israel is the one who benefited from 9/11. They couldn't get the American government on their side. You know, they were really starting to back off with some of the things they're doing in Palestine and the whole Greater Israel project. But since 9/11, that's just gone full steam ahead. They've been trying to get America to go to war with the Arab world for years. And 9/11 made sure that happened. So, you know, who benefited from 9/11? Was it the Arabs? Look at the Arab world now. Did they benefit from 9/11? Osama bin Laden denied that he had anything to do with it. Of course, we've got the famous confession video where he actually mentioned it. But if you look at that video, the person in the video is not Osama bin Laden. It's somebody else. He's wearing a gold ring and a gold watch for a start, and he's writing with his right hand. Osama bin Laden didn't wear any gold because he's a Muslim. They do this all the time. You have these Muslims doing things. They're wearing gold rings. Muslims don't wear gold. It's as simple as that. So There's so much in 9/11 which doesn't add up, and I really believe it was carried out by Israel because, you know, cui bono, who benefits?
Mm.
And if you look at who's benefited most from Israel, it isn't even the United States, because the United States has got itself massively in debt. I mean, it's heading for a massive economic collapse because of the amount of money it's spending on war. And while it's doing all this, it's still giving $7 million a day to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
It's supplying all the arms that are being used in the conflict in Palestine at the moment. So, you know,
I think it's been infected as a puppet infrastructure. I mean,
well, it has. You've got Zionists run the whole thing. People with dual citizenships, they've manoeuvred themselves into positions of power right through all of our countries.
Not a bad day's work vampiring a whole nation, is it?
Oh, yeah, it's not just the whole nation, it's the whole world.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing, which brings me back to Gaza as well. Someone said to me the other day, oh, Gaza, that's that place that Israel occupies. And I said, no, Gaza's the only place in the world Israel doesn't occupy.
Yeah.
That's why they're fighting so much, and that's why they're trying to exterminate them so much, because
mm-hmm.
they'll never back down.
Mm-hmm.
We could all take a lesson from the people in Gaza, I think.
Yeah. Let's talk about Gaza. I mean, first of all, tell us a little bit about the history of, you know, where this modern state of, the secular state of Israel comes from today, a little bit of background on that, why it's different to Jewish and Semitic origins, and kind of explain just a few terms for us, Max, because it's confusing for people out there.
You've got to really look at who moved into Israel and controls it, and what caused this whole conflict. The whole conflict started when Israel was divided, when Palestine was divided and mm-hmm. annexed and split in two, and half of it became Israel and half of it became Palestine. And what happened then is an event that the Palestinians call the Nakba, which was the great tragedy. The great event where they all got dispossessed from their homes. What Israel did, what the Jews did when they came down, all these people from Europe who claimed they're Jews, which is a debatable point.
Sure.
A lot of research indicates that these people are actually Khazars from the Khazarian Empire. They're all white-skinned. They're not actually Semitic Jews.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened when they came down was they ethnically cleansed all of the people that were actually in the confines of what became Israel. These people were supposed to become Israeli citizens, but the plan was never to let them become Israeli citizens, to just gradually push them out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look at Theodor Herzl's diary. He wrote an entry in 1895 when he said, we will have to expel all of the local inhabitants, you know, and this must be done very discreetly,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we'll just gently push them over the border and find them jobs in other countries, but we won't allow them to have jobs in our country. So what happened was, there was a massive amount of ethnic cleansing, massive amounts of refugees were created. And this is why the peace process has never gone forward between Israel and Palestine, because they won't acknowledge the expelling of the population. There's 7 million Palestinian refugees around the world that are waiting to return home,
wow.
who were promised that they could return home. This is why Yasser Arafat, right up until 2000, Yasser Arafat thought that they were going to be able to return, that the occupied territories in West Bank would be given back to Palestine and people would be able to return to their homes. And that's never been part of the plan. And because the Nakba is not even acknowledged by Israel, I mean, if you look at the Israel history of that time, it's stories of great heroics and all sorts of stuff and great battles and all of the wonderful things they did and how oppressed they were and the great battles they had to free their lands.
Mm.
But really what it was a systematic process of ethnic cleansing and genocide. It was carried out against the Palestinian people. And they were pushed further and further back. You know, and now you've got these little enclaves that are left in West Bank, which is segregated, got a wall around it. Claims it's not an apartheid system, but they've got a wall around part of the city. And you've got Gaza Strip. And Gaza Strip is essentially a modern-day equivalent of the Warsaw Ghetto. That's what it is. It's just an imprisoned population. 1.8 million people that they've imprisoned, and they've been brutalizing ever since. But what's going on in Palestine and Israel is a gradual ethnic cleansing that's been going on for 66 years.
And it's worse than that. I mean, people are aware of ethnic cleansing in Bosnia, Albania, Serbia. You know, and people are horrified by that in the 90s. I mean, but this stuff's been going on since 1940-something.
The 1940s, and people don't, even now, people are cheering Israel on because they think that Gaza Strip is full of terrorists. They're not realizing this is a resistance movement that has been holding out against brutal terrorism that's been inflicted on them by the Israeli government for over 60 years.
Mm.
That's what's actually going on. The real terrorists in this situation is the Israeli government.
It's the control of mass media is marketing this system as something else.
All the mass media is run by Israeli companies.
Yeah. I was just telling you before we started the show, I read a newspaper on the train here last night and I was horrified because the reason I was horrified was because I knew the truth. And the article that I read, you would think that Israel was a hero.
Mm.
You know, a hero nation taking down three terrorists who we don't even know if they exist. We don't even know why they were targeting, but they dropped 20 one-ton bombs on several buildings. God knows how many Palestinians were killed in the process to find three fictitious leaders.
They said it was one of the most brutal days of slaughter that they've had since the conflict began. And I know of one day where they killed 90 people or something in one day, so it's obviously worse than that they've done with this attack. To kill three Hamas leaders, and they've got to say that they've done this. Oh, look, we got the terrorists, so it's all worthwhile. They've got to try to justify their actions to the world.
Yeah.
But Hamas is a legitimate resistance movement. It was a democratically elected government. They never tell you that it was a democratically elected government.
Mm-hmm.
We get told that it took power violently in a coup. That's not what happened. They were voted in democratically,
mm-hmm.
and then the United States and Israel financed Fatah in a coup
mm-hmm.
so that they wouldn't leave office, and Hamas had to go and physically throw them out of office.
Wow.
And that was a violent sort of a civil war to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. But they're a democratically elected government, and this was a monitored election that was instigated by the West, and it's all open, and we're going to monitor it and make sure everything's fine, but oh no, they voted the wrong way. They voted for people that we didn't want them to vote for.
Mm-hmm.
So the West manufactured this coup and tried to throw Hamas out. And when Hamas won, they just said, oh, well, you're all terrorists. And they built a wall around the place. And they've been under siege for the last 7 years. They don't even allow water to flow in there. There isn't even fresh water in game. And that is...
How do they get fresh water, Max?
Well, they get bottled water. They're allowed one truckload of supplies a day, one semi-trailer load
of
supplies
a day.
1.8 million. One semi-trailer...
even if that was just full of water alone, that wouldn't be enough.
Exactly. And even when Israel bombed the power plant recently, you know what they said? They said, oh, we're putting the Gazans on diet. Now, this is beyond psychopathy. This is beyond cruelty. This is sadism. And it's absolutely sadistic what they do to these people. To cut off the flow of water, to have children there having salt water showers, that's all you can have. And the people in Gaza the sewage is overflowing into the streets because they can't get past to fix the sewage supply. All the buildings have been reduced to rubble. They have electricity for about 2 hours a day at the moment because the power plant's been blown up. And they're still making effort to help other people. I got a call from a friend of mine in Gaza today. He said they're supporting this international organization to fight disease around the world. So even in the position that they're in, they're still doing what they can to help others. They're incredible people.
Yeah.
Very staunch.
Yeah. Staunch and resilient. You know, where's the outcry from the Western democracy?
Well, because there is outcry from the West. There is outcry from the people in the West, but there's not a lot of outcry from the governments. Only enough outcry to, please the people a little bit, just to appease
the public opinion.
Yeah, appease the public a little bit. You know, but the public opinion has been phenomenal. It's really, Israel shot themselves in the foot with this. They've created millions of Palestinian activists out of people who've never even heard of Gaza, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And as hard as it is to say it, and as connected as I am to the people there, and as much as I don't like their suffering, in many ways, what Israel's done is one of the greatest things it could ever have done for Palestine, because it showed the world just how strong and resilient these people are, and just how cruel and inhumane and intolerant Israel is. It's shown Israel up to be the terrorist state that it is, and they've shot themselves in the foot. They can't last this, and they'll never outlast Hamas and the Palestinian people. They'll have to kill every last one of them before they back down. They will never, ever back down.
I think that's probably what they're going to try and do, Max. I think that's their only... I think they realise that.
They would have done that if it hadn't been for public outcry. When they went in there, I said, this is ethnic cleansing. You don't take 60,000 troops and a column of tanks into Gaza Strip to clean out a few tunnels. This is ethnic cleansing.
Mm.
But we've turned that around. We have. The outcry on social media has been phenomenal, and on the internet, it's stopped what they were doing. Same as we did in Syria.
Yeah.
We nipped that in the bud, and we've nipped this in the bud as well.
Yeah.
And the the wave of anti-Israeli sentiment that swept across the world because of this event, because of what we've done on social media, has been absolutely phenomenal.
Let's talk about who these guys are in bed with, the Israeli government, for example. I mean, these guys get arms and backing of financial support from America, the UK, I think supplies arms as well. Let's talk about some of this money trail and some of their backing, Max.
Oh, yeah, it always comes from the United States and from the UK with Europe sort of tagging along behind, as Europe does. Europe's too scared to do much else but follow the United States and the UK. But all of it comes from the United States, the weapons mainly.
Mm.
I mean, the UK has said now they're going to block some arms supplies to Israel. I mean, it's a token effort.
It's petty.
It's a token effort, only because of the public outcry. They're thinking about blocking some if the fighting doesn't continue. Well, hang on, what about blocking it right now? What about doing something about this slaughter of civilians? 80% of the people that have been killed are civilians, you know, over 300 children.
Mm-hmm.
This is absolutely ridiculous. It's not acceptable under anyone's standards. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of what's been turning the world around, because under anyone's standards, the killing of children isn't acceptable. But if you look at the weapons, they're all United States. The white phosphorus, they're using United States weapons. The dime ammunition, I think, is United States.
Just explain what that phosphorus does, man. That burns the skin, yeah.
White phosphorus, it actually, if it lands on your skin, it'll just keep burning right down to the bone. It'll suck all the moisture out of your body. It'll keep burning while it can get oxygen. And, of course, your body's got a lot of oxygen in it. And that's what it does. You breathe it in and it burns you from the inside out. It's a banned chemical.
This is chemical warfare. This is nasty.
It's banned chemical weapons. You can't use these on civilian populations, and that's what they're doing. Same with the dime ammunition and the flesh aid bombs. These are all banned weapons that you can't use in civilian areas, and they're doing it. They're going in and killing these people in Gaza with the most brutal weapons possible. And Gaza is a civilian population. There are no military targets in Gaza. Even Hamas is made up of civilians, and these are legitimate resistance fighters. And sure, there's some bad elements in there. I mean, there is in all governments, you know. Mm-hmm. But you can't condemn an entire population due to the actions of a few. And that's what we've got in Gaza, is collective punishment of 1.8 million people, 900,000 children. And it's just not acceptable. And Israel's saying, oh, we're giving them warning and telling them they can leave. Where are they going to go? There's a wall around the country. They don't know where to go. All the borders are closed. Israel's closed off, you know, put a wall around three sides of it. And Egypt's closed off the Rafah crossing. Egypt's as much to blame for this as Israel is. Mm. Even more to blame, because they're Arabs and they should know better. These are their Arab brothers in there.
Yeah.
And they've closed the borders off and they're supporting the Israelis.
Are they more worried about their own present situation? Is that what the Egyptian problem is?
Well, the whole Arab area has been destabilized. You know, all of the countries in the area have been destabilized. I think this has been done on purpose, like you go into Gaza and do what they're doing.
Mm.
They've destabilized the entire Arab region. It's all part of the Greater Israel Project.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they want to do. They want to take over Libya. They want to take over Jordan. They want to take over, you know, all of these countries. They want the whole lot to be Israel. Yeah. Get rid of all the Arabs. That's the plan.
Wow. This is like an undignified reality, Max, you know, when it's been tolerated by the Western democracy.
Because the media is controlled by these people. The media is controlled by Zionists, you know, and it's very important to make the distinction between Zionists and Jews. You know, a lot of Jews in Tel Aviv, a lot of Jews in Israel are up in arms about this. They don't support what's going on. I recently spoke at the Boom Festival in Portugal. I had a lot of Israelis come up to me and speak to me after the talk that I gave at Boom. Mm-hmm. And I was not kind to Israel at all. I was very firm, but I tried to be kind to the Jewish people, but I was very firm as far as the state of Israel goes. And a lot of these people are waking up to this. So we've got to really look at what the situation is. And I believe it all comes down to unity again, common unity. We need the people of Israel to realize that they've got a rogue government in control of their country. And it's going to bring about the implosion of Israel if they don't pay attention.
The Orthodox Jews, just to mention these guys are really outspoken. I've seen a lot of them at the anti-war march in London here as well, you know, and it's nice to see that these guys aren't lying down either, you know.
Well, they're the ones that are copying the flak from what these Zionists are doing. That's the problem, because the Zionists are hiding behind the smokescreen of Jewish anti-Semitism. If you speak out against the Israeli government, if you speak out against Zionism, you're an anti-Semite.
Mm.
So they've got all these keywords that they use, you know, and it's just not true. It's a scam, you know. But it's a program that people run, and they're too scared to speak out against what the Israeli government might be doing, because they'll get labelled as an anti-Semite. And that's like being labelled as a rapist. I mean, it's very hard to live down.
It's a monopoly on the truth, basically. They're masking the truth and have a monopoly on it.
Oh, yeah, that's because they control the mainstream media. All
Max,
of it, you know.
Give us a moment to give us out your YouTube channel, because people will find the truth on your channel. You also have Ken O'Keefe's channel as well, and he does the Middle East program, so maybe you want to try out the YouTube channel and your website as well?
Yeah, well, the website is thecrowhouse.com, and the YouTube channel is just called The Crow House. There's another one called AOD Scarecrow, which is an archive that's been up there for about 6 or 7 years, mm-hmm. but I don't actually upload to that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a new one called The Crow House. That's the YouTube channel. And you'll find everything on my website, thecrowhouse.com. Mm-hmm. You'll find links to everything there.
What can people do to speak out about Gaza and Israel and the conflict there, the present day?
Well, going to these rallies helps. Showing solidarity for the Palestinian people helps. And writing to the Egyptian embassy is a really big thing we can do at the moment. Put a lot of pressure on Egypt to open Rafah Crossing.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can get humanitarian aid in there, and we can get refugees out, we can get people out for medical attention if they open Rafah Crossing. They're not doing it. This, like I said, Egypt is as complicit, if not more to blame than Israel for this problem.
This is the bit of the Gaza Strip that borders Egypt, is that correct?
It borders the Sinai. Sinai. The Sinai Peninsula.
Why does Egypt block that? Why don't they help the borders?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? Why do they block it? Why won't they let people out? It's because of Israeli control over the region. Yeah. Like back in the 70s when the Oslo Accord happened and Israel was given control of the Sinai, that kind of... That ended up being rolled back, and control of the Sinai went back to Egypt. But there's still a large Israeli contingent there, a large Israeli presence, and they do whatever Israel wants, basically.
Wow.
And you've got to look at the gas fields and all the oil fields that were discovered off Gaza. This was back in 2000 they were discovered.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Egypt has got its eye on that as well, because it's in their maritime waters. If Israel gets control of Gaza the way they want, some of that will fall into Israeli control. And they've been talking about, Israel's even been talking about now how they're going to give the Rockefellers and Standard Oil control of the gas fields there. That's who they're going to sell it to once they take control of the Gaza Strip. But I don't think they're going to do it. I don't think they're going to get control of the Gaza Strip, because I don't think the public will let them. I don't think the world will let them now. I think they've really shot themselves in the foot with this.
Yeah. As Ken says, Israel is Rothschild's fiefdom. So.
Well, it is. Israel is. It's run by the Rothschilds. It was created by the Rothschilds. Look at the Balfour Declaration, where it all came from. Look at where all their money comes from. About 80% of it is owned by the Rothschilds, the land in Israel. Yeah. That's who supplies all the housing estates, and that's who finances the settlement program and all this sort of stuff. This settlement program is absolutely insidious. It's just basically reclaiming the land for Israel. It doesn't matter who lives there. They just go in and they just move you out. They extend the buffer zone. They're just saying, we're just going to move the wall another quarter mile. So we're going to have to bulldoze these homes, which expels more families. And then they build Israeli settlements there. And these settlements, these aren't log cabins. These are like Beverly Hills.
Mm.
You know, they're big, big cities that they're building there. And all of the Palestinians are being expelled. And they're saying, well, just go away, but they've got nowhere to go.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, you know, it's the pound, the dollar, and the euro. This is the banking cartels. It's all money-orientated, this.
It is. It's like I said, the money system is the head of the snake. We've got to reclaim the money system. And that's what I'm hoping these reset people will do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I met these guys, I went and met them yesterday, and they're just like three people.
Yeah.
Three people. There's a Muslim woman and a Muslim man and another guy who built the website, and that's basically all the reset crew are. They're just three people.
Yeah.
Just three ordinary people who had this extraordinary idea of using common law to institute a referendum in each of our countries, anywhere that's been controlled by the Crown. In order to have a referendum here in the UK, you only need 10 people in each parish to say they want a referendum. And then it gets put forth to vote, and people vote on whether they want a referendum. It becomes a public thing.
Mm-hmm.
And all you need to do is have about 60% of people vote positively in the referendum, and that could put control of the money system back in the hands of the people. Mm-hmm. So that's what they're looking at, and that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything like that that's going to empower the people and rock the boat is a good thing. Sure.
This is worse apartheid than what happened in South Africa. Right.
In Israel. Oh, yeah. It is. Yeah. It's far worse than what happened in South Africa.
And the thing was, the crux of what happened in South Africa, it was rugby. It was the Rugby World Cup that they didn't get to play, and they were, you know, they were not liked around the world because of their, you know, they were being sent to Coventry, as we say over here, you know, being blacklisted because of a sports, you know, and they didn't like that, you know, and that's when they kind of, you know, woke up to the world's opinion, you know. But this is really so much different now. It's like...
It is, because of the specter of terrorism.
You know,
and we're told that all of these people are terrorists. And some of the propaganda that Israel puts forth, that every family in Gaza is a terrorist. There are no innocents in Gaza. You know, even the children aren't innocent. They're the children of terrorists, and they grow up to be terrorists, you know.
Mm.
And you go to a Gazan house, and you've got the kitchen and the living room and the bedroom and the rocket launching room. This is a complete fabrication. It's absolutely
You've been there, Max.
Tell us, I snuck in there. You know, yeah.
Tell us about the tunnel system. And I know there's several tunnels in and out, but tell us why the tunnels are there and why they use this tunnel system as a ploy to go in and you know, to attack.
Well, they don't go in and attack Israel through the tunnel systems. They don't. There are no tunnels into Israel.
Right.
If you look at the buffer zone, I mean, you look at Benjamin Netanyahu, he'll give you a little diagram and he'll say, look, here's a Gazan house, here's the wall, and here's an Israeli kindergarten. And I'll show it, they'll draw a tunnel that goes through from the house to the kindergarten with a big weapons cache in the middle. And so they're digging these tunnels so they can kill Israeli children. It's rubbish. The buffer zone is like half a mile to a mile wide. Mm-hmm. This tunnel you'd have to dig would have to be a mile long, and then you're going to come up in Israel. Where are you coming up?
Mm.
You might come up in someone's backyard. They'll just kill you. And if there's tunnels into Israel, Israel could go and block them off at the Israeli end.
Yeah.
There are no tunnels into Israel. The tunnels were through to the Sinai from Rafah, and they were to bring in supplies, like diesel, food, all of the stuff that they need to survive.
Mm.
And with these tunnels closed now, there's no means for them to survive. There's a severe water shortage in Gaza at the moment. There's dysentery breaking out. Everyone's getting scabies, and because everything's been destroyed around them, and they've got no water, they've got no aid. We can't even get aid in. Israel isn't even letting Amnesty International in. They're not letting international aid organizations in. So these tunnels were to supply vital supplies for Egypt, but they were to Gaza. But they weren't the tunnels that we snuck in. We actually snuck in a rebel tunnel, which was a tiny little tunnel about that high. Mm-hmm. We had to crawl through on our hands and knees for over an hour to get in there. And we just kind of ran around the country for 10 days and hired a unit and just hung out.
Yeah.
You know, terrible terrorist-controlled country. And here's a couple of white guys running around with video cameras, interviewing people and speaking at the university and all sorts of stuff.
Wow.
We ended up getting detained by Hamas on the border on the way out because we actually got they confiscated our passports a couple of days after we went in there because they found out we were in there. Mainly because we've been posting videos on YouTube to let the world know that we were in Gaza Strip.
Wow.
And so they came and confiscated our passports and kept them for 6 days, which is an interesting feeling, being in Gaza with no passport. And when we left, they detained us at the border and interrogated us for 5 hours to try to find out how we got in. We didn't tell them how we got in. We just said, no, we can't find the tunnel. They ended up letting us go. They supplied a driver to get us back to Cairo safely across the Sinai. And because they lost our luggage, they found it and they sent our luggage on after us with another driver. So this is this terrible terrorist organization. Well, they interviewed me and interrogated me by giving me tea and bickies and asking me questions. They provided a driver to get me back to Cairo and they sent my lost luggage after me.
Wow.
So they were pretty reasonable considering we'd broken into their country illegally and we're running around with a video camera for 10 days. I mean, they could have shot us as spies, but they didn't. They let us go. They were very reasonable. I mean, even though they're unpredictable, most Arabs are, a lot of these people in these war-torn countries in positions of control can be pretty unpredictable, you know, but they were very, very good to us. They were very kind to us. They were very considerate to us. It could have gone a lot worse, you know.
Is there no way of getting aid in and on? The tunnels are shut down.
The
flotillas can't get in with aid
either. The tunnels were shut down by the Morsi government when Mubarak was dispossessed and thrown out and the Muslim Brotherhood came into power, which is another Israeli operation. All it did was destabilize the entire region and close all the tunnels into Gaza. You know?
Wow. The thing for me is, it's like, I mean, anti-war activism, Max, is like, it's never more important because of the global scale of things. This is not just something that's happening in Israel. It's not just somebody, you know, some country having some sort of a independent problem in its own country. This is a global thing. If this happens here...
It is. The way of Palestine will be the way of the world if we don't pay attention. That's the thing. And it's presented as a completely... wrong perspective. People think it's a war. People think Israel's at war with Gaza. They think that Israel and Palestine are two separate countries. They're actually the one country.
Mm.
And Gaza is a refugee camp, is what it is. It's the last stronghold of Palestinian autonomy.
Sure.
Which, and it's been blocked off. It's been under siege. Israel say it's under a blockade to stop weapons getting in there. But it's been under siege. It's been besieged for 7 years, collective punishment. And it's not a war. You can't have a war against the civilian population of refugees. You know, it's not a war. It's an ethnic cleansing. It's a genocide.
Mm-hmm.
You need two armies to have a war. You need two countries to have a war.
Sure, yeah.
You know, or even if it's a civil war, it would be the population in the one country. This isn't even civil war. This is ethnic cleansing of the last remnants of the people whose land they stole. That's what's going on there.
It's often marketed as two separate countries, isn't it?
Well, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Palestine isn't even on any maps anymore. It's just Gaza and the West Bank. They removed Palestine from the maps a few years ago, back in the 70s, I think. So it's gotten really bad. And if we don't pay attention to this, it will come to us, because what they've done with this latest conflict is they've really escalated things. They're using banned weapons on civilian populations. They're doing it, it's kind of live on TV, and the world's cheering them on. And if we don't pay attention to this, then it will be coming to our countries as well. They're trying to create civil unrest everywhere. You know, they want you to riot. They want to be able to bring in martial law. Look what's going on in Ferguson in the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, this is deliberate, absolutely deliberate. They've gone and shot this black guy, and they've gone and shot somebody else. And they're not addressing the problem. They're just bringing in martial law. They're bringing in National Guard, bringing in all these militarized police and all this stuff to try to escalate it. Very soon you'll have the rest of the country getting up in arms about this as well, and they'll just be able to lock down the whole country. Yeah, that's what it's all about.
When you look at the police forces in the 60s, Max, and what they are nowadays, it's shocking. They are militaries now.
They are militarized police. I mean, a lot of the weapons and the armored vehicles and stuff that they sent to Iraq for the war, they never ended up using. So they brought it all back and they just gave it away to all the police forces. And these guys don't even know how to use this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and half of them are just psychos anyway. I mean, why would you shoot a black man walking towards you with his hands up? Shot him six times, twice in the head. Twice in the head. What's this all about, you know?
I actually, going back to Gaza, I watched a guy, I think I said this on the show we did during the week, there was a guy with a yellow vest on, and they sniped him beside aid workers. They were running, he was looking for his family, basically. It's on YouTube. And when he was lying, gasping for his last breath, they just sniped him, and people were standing beside him watching that happen. You
know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they've blown up aid trucks all the time. They've blown up ambulances all the time. They blew up, they sniped one guy who was... I think he was Canadian or Norwegian. He was running children off to safety. They shot him in the head. I've got a friend there, Noor Harazin, who's been reporting news from Gaza, and they shot her five-year-old cousin in the head, just sniped him. They're terrible. You know, one of the main goals is to kill children, just to terrorize the people. You know,
just to make them fight back more.
And some of the stuff they do to the houses they control as well. They go and they'll kick someone out of their house and say, we need this as an outpost. And then they absolutely destroy the house before they leave. They rub feces all over the wall. They take dumps in the lounge and just do everything they can to destroy the place, break all the furniture, rip all the clothes up, and just turn it into a demolition site.
This is not human behavior, Max.
It's totally inhuman. And that's the problem, is that a lot of Israelis are just trained to hate Palestinians. See, everything Israel tells you is backwards. They say that the Arabs are trained to hate the Jews. It's not like that at all. The Jews are trained to hate the Arabs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Arabs are very respectful, very courteous people.
Yeah.
Every Arab country that I've gone to, every Arab that I've met has been a very caring and courteous person.
And the Orthodox Jews, they used to love the Arabs in their local before the 1940s. They worked alongside with them.
They all lived in peace up until 1948, till 1947 when they annexed the country. There was the Jews and Arabs lived in peace in Israel, in Palestine for thousands and thousands of years. They used to babysit each other's kids as recently as 1946. And now they're at loggerheads with each other, you know. It's ridiculous.
Who inspires you, Max?
Who inspired me?
Yeah, who inspires you today? Who did inspire you, Max?
Frank Zappa, to be honest. Frank Zappa. When I was a kid, I realized that the world was all messed up and I couldn't figure out why. And then I discovered Frank Zappa's music in 1968. I discovered Frank Zappa's music, and he put out this album called We're Only In It For The Money.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this album and my whole life changed. I went, wow, that's what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I became an activist really from that point
on. He had some awesome quotes as well, didn't he?
Well, he's amazing.
He spoke some truth.
He's an amazing guy. He was an amazing guy.
Ahead of his time, in a way.
He did, but it's a strange place for an awakening to come from. But, I mean, I was already awake. I just couldn't understand why the world was the way it is.
Mm.
But Frank kind of sorted it all out for me and explained it all for
Articulated it in a way.
He did. He put it in a way that I could understand. It didn't really make me become that active, but it consoled me to the fact that I was not alone in realizing the world was all messed up. I felt pretty alone up to that point. And he really inspired me. But like I said, I stayed in a bubble and on the outside of society for a long time. I wasn't really active. I was outspoken, but my friends used to say I was a rebel without a cause, and so did my family. And they said, you're just against everything. You know, why don't you conform? And I just went, well, no, because it's all corrupt. And I don't want to have to pay to be alive, and I don't understand why the world is the way it is, and I just can't do the things you people do, you know.
Sure.
But it wasn't until 9/11 that I really became active, you know, when that happened, and I thought, well, it's important that I start speaking out, so.
Something I wanted to touch on, I haven't spoken to you about before, is chemtrails, Max. What is going on with chemtrails? Is this going to be, the bit that I can never understand about chemtrails is surely if you're chemtrailing the planet, then the people that are in power are going to be chemtrailing themselves as well.
Yeah. Well, I believe a lot of what chemtrails is about is transhumanism. Yeah. But it's an experiment. It's an experiment. They don't really know where they're going with a lot of this stuff. And even the control grid that they're putting in place, they don't really know how it's going to come out.
Mm-hmm.
It's just this big experiment to see how much control they can get, how many people they can depopulate at the same time. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think chemtrails is all about transhumanism. Some of the research that I've done, some of the stuff that's actually in the chemtrails, it's like a multi-platform delivery system, you know. Some people say it's being done to block out the sun, global warming, all this sort of stuff. Yeah, there's a possibility they're doing some of that as well. A lot of people think that's real.
It could be to mask what they're actually doing.
Yeah, it could be to mask what they're doing. Some people say they're using it to turn the sky into a giant TV screen, you know, get enough particulates in there that they can stay as something like Project Bluebeak. Really, when you look at what's in some of the chemtrails, the barium, the strontium, the aluminium.
It's not good stuff.
It's not good. They're poisoning the soil and causing us so the crops won't grow. So we've got to use Monsanto, you know, aluminium resistant seeds and all this sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they're forcing people into GMOs,
mm-hmm.
which again is all about depopulation. Mm-hmm. You know, really when you look at it, depopulation and controlling those who are left.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're going to genetically modify the human race and merge us with machine the way they want to, chances are they're going to do it genetically from the inside out. And that's what I believe the chemtrails are about. They're changing our genetic structure or what we're breathing in, the certain attitudes we have in our body. And you look at the elite, why would they be chemtrailing themselves? Well, they want transhumanism.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have the same biological environments in their body as us. They don't receive the same vaccinations as us, all the stuff that's put in the food.
Nice fresh bottled water as well.
Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff in the food. I mean, the queen grows organic veggies in the palace. They all have organic food, you know, so they know not to eat what they're selling to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So what these nanoparticulates and additives that are in the chemtrails will do to people will determine or depend on what sort of genetic environment they're being introduced into,
mm-hmm.
which will depend on what foods you're eating, what vaccinations you've had, mm-hmm. and all this sort of stuff. So, but like I said, it's an experiment. I don't think they really know where they're going.
Yeah.
It's really crazy some of the stuff they do.
Mm.
And they're clutching at straws with everything they do. Everything's backfiring for them, you know.
I know they have the Georgia Guidestones, and I know they want to depopulate to a very small number of what we are now. And I think they will try anything and everything. Like, they'll try anything.
They already are. See, they don't need enough people to run the infrastructure. They don't need enough people. Because now the world's smaller. They've got their pipelines out everywhere, and they know where all the resources are, and it's all being funneled back to them.
Mm-hmm.
Now they just need enough people to run the resources. And you have to keep people enslaved into this economic model so they believe they have to pay to be alive. So they'll work the mines, they'll work the lowly jobs and all this stuff they have to do because they have to put food on the table. You know?
Mm-hmm. What's new for you now, Max? I know you're in the UK now as we speak. You're speaking at several events. You want to maybe throw some out?
Yeah, well, I just spoke at the Boom Festival a couple of weeks ago, and I spoke in Bristol last night. I'm speaking in Glastonbury on the 31st of August, which should be an interesting event.
Wow,
that's with Ken O'Keefe and Ian R. Crane, and there's a whole bunch of people at the event there. And I'm speaking at Zoo Studios on the 6th of September as well. Yeah. And that's with Ken O'Keefe and Charles Shaw and a couple of other people. So that'll be an interesting gig as well. I like Zoo Studios.
Wow.
It's a nice place. It's a nice place to give talks. And from there, I'm going over to speak in Berlin,
mm-hmm.
and then I've got to speak in Copenhagen, and then I've got to head home to speak in Sydney.
That's the Open Minds Festival in Copenhagen.
The Open Mind Festival in Copenhagen.
It's getting quite strong now, isn't it?
Yeah, and the Entheon Science Festival in, Conference in Berlin, which will be a completely different talk, because obviously it's about entheogens. The main focus there will be on ayahuasca and medicinal plants and stuff like
that. That's touching on, because I know we've both shared that experience in Peru, and I found it incredibly beautiful. I'm not in a rush back to go and do it. I think it just opened me up to the world, and I came back with empathy and love for the planet, Max. You know, and I think that, I know Graham Hancock would say, like, you know, he reckons all politicians should have a course of ayahuasca before they get their job. Like,
yeah, absolutely. It's convincing them to want to do it, because you've got to want to do it. That's the thing. You can't just force someone to do ayahuasca. But, I think it's a very grounding experience. It is, and the reason that it's being brought out to the world now is because the shaman in Peru realized that we're destroying the planet. Western society is destroying the planet, and if it isn't reined in, then they're going to go down with us.
Mm-hmm.
So they brought this out to give people a crash course in reality, so that people understand that the Earth is alive. She is your mother, and you do need to participate in bringing about some positive change.
You know. Time is right, isn't it?
It is. The time's absolutely right. But it's important now as well. I mean, we're running out of time. Even with some of the things I wanted to do with the Full Circle Project, I wanted to go and create workshops and re-educate people and maybe go around the world and just spend time re-educating people on how to approach their governments and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The situation in Gaza has changed a lot of that. And we're also running out of time. So I've got to refocus the project on stuff that's really going to push the envelope now.
Yeah.
Because we've got to pay attention. We've got to you know, take things in the right
direction. Have you got any documentary projects you're working on?
I'm working on a documentary called Earth Song, which I'm kind of halfway through, but I've run into a few snags with that, but I'm still working on it. But I've got, because I was supposed to be in Gaza now, I was actually supposed to be in Gaza for Ramadan this year in July. I was supposed to be in there.
Sure.
And I've lost contact with a lot of the people that I've got in there, a lot of my friends. There's a little girl called Noor who I was going to make a documentary about, and I've got that started as well because I intend to go into Gaza as soon as there's an opening.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to create a documentary called Finding Noor, and I'm going to go and find her because she's listed among the missing at the moment. Nobody knows whether she's alive or dead. And the area that she was in was subject to heavy shelling. There is a possibility that she got out. So I'm going to go and find her. So that's something that I really want to work on. I'm going to be putting a lot of focus on, because I think it will really bring it home to people that these are humans in here. These are human beings, and they're beautiful people. And she's a wonderful little girl. I'd adopt her if I could. I'd love to get her out of Gaza, but then I'd adopt half of the strip if I could.
Yeah.
I've got so many friends in there that I want to get out of that place.
There's a lot of orphan children there, too, at the moment.
There's a lot of orphan children in there. She's an orphan. She's one of the Samuni children. So there's a lot of orphans in the Samuni family. They were subject to a terrible massacre in Operation Castlehead, which was in 2009. And she's one of the survivors of that. So that's the main, going to be the main focus of the next film that comes out. We'll probably be finding more.
Wow. I wish you every success with that one, Max. I really do. And
I'll find her.
Yeah.
I'll find her. Whether she's alive or dead, I'll find her. I'll find where she is.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping she's alive.
Me too, brother, me too. Is there anything you can say, Max, or maybe people can help? Maybe people want to donate. Is there any websites people want to go to? I know aid can't actually get in. It's very difficult.
Like, people have been asking me, where can I donate to help with the Gaza mission? Like, I've started off another mission called Gaza Shield. I wanted to take a whole bunch of human shields in there, and we're just not able to enter. They're not even letting Amnesty International in. They won't let anybody in. But I've got over 1,000 people signed up to the Gaza Shield mission, and when there is an opening, we'll get in. But
so that's
GazaShield.com. Once we get in there, and once there's access, then I'll worry about connecting donations and stuff to get in there then. But at the moment, I don't want people giving me money for Gaza because I don't know where it's going. I don't even know if I can get in. I don't want to have the stigma of having all of these donations come in for Gaza if I can't get them in Gaza.
But people can sign up at GazaShield.com.
People can sign up at GazaShield.com and just sit there and wait.
Yeah.
And all you can do is wait at the moment. I mean, it's there and the mission's there. We did want to go in with a human shield operation, but unfortunately Israel is just shooting human shields. They're not giving any quarter to human shields at all. So there were a whole bunch of people went in from West Bank, from the International Solidarity Movement sent a whole bunch of people in, but Israel just killed them all. So there's no point
going in doing that. It's insane.
Yeah, so we've got to wait until there's some sort of opening. We've got to keep international pressure up on the Israeli embassy and on the Egyptian embassy because we have to get Rafah border open. Israel's never going to let anybody in through Israel. So the pressure has to go on to Egypt. You know, I'd like to see a lot of people just show up at the Rafah border and just wait there, waiting to get in. But, you know, again, that's not going to happen until the fighting stops.
Sure.
And it's debatable whether the fighting is going to stop because Hamas are not going to back down. They want the blockade lifted. They're not going to stop firing rockets into Israel until the blockade's lifted. It's as simple as that. They've been under siege for 7 years, and they're basically saying, look, you know, kill us or let us live like other people.
Yeah.
And one even my friends that I've spoken to in there are supporting that. They're saying, I can't live like this anymore. We've got no sea for the fishermen. We've got no water. We've got no sewage. We've got no electricity. We've got nothing. We can't live like this.
Yeah.
You know, either you let us live with dignity.
It's like a war of attrition. It's a war of attrition.
Well, it is. It is. It's shocking. It's absolutely shocking. And they're just, what Israel's doing is saying they won't even enter into terms until Gaza is disarmed.
Mm-hmm.
And if Gaza is disarmed completely, that just gives Israel open slather to go in and do what they want.
Yeah.
Basically they're saying, we're going to keep punching you until you stop fighting back. Yeah. And we've been punching you for 66 years and you won't stop fighting back, so we're going to label you as terrorists because you're fighting back. Which is exactly what the Nazis did to the Jews in Warsaw Ghetto.
They're not better than the Nazis.
They should know better.
Yeah.
They should know better. They are no better. They really are no better than the people who oppressed them in World War II. And a lot of that is speculative as well. I don't think we've been told the truth about many things that happened in World War II. I think it's a huge propaganda exercise.
I really commend you on bringing the awareness of Gaza, because I don't know, yourself and Ken O'Keefe, of course, like, you know, if it wasn't for you guys bringing such attention, Max, you know, it's, you really do a wealth of service. I know you do it anyway, Max. You do it out of your heart. So, you know, I do commend you.
That's what it's all about. I mean, everything I do, that's the motivation. You know, all the humanitarian stuff that I do. I mean, really, it's all humanitarian. Even talking about the money system, everything that I do right since the beginning is humanitarian. I mean, I don't do what I do because I've got an agenda. I don't want to be famous. I don't want profit. I don't want money. I don't want any of that sort of stuff. I just want a better world.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be able to go and visit my brothers and sisters and see that they're happy and laugh and smile and dance and have a great time, because that's what life should be about.
Yeah.
It's not about working and paying to be here. You know, we spend our whole lives working and we can spend our whole lives living under a system which is brutal and it's violent. Now, someone said to me the other day, would you be prepared to use violence? And I said, well, I don't support violence, but I support counter-violence.
Yeah.
You know, if someone's violent to me, I will stand my ground against them. I won't take a backward step to them, but I won't then become the attacker. But should we use violence? I mean, violence isn't good, but when you look at the situations that have been brought against us, you know, causing people to pay to be alive, this is violent.
Mm-hmm.
This is violence. Training people not to think is violence. I mean, all of the stuff of this system is violence. Sending children off the door to war is violence. It's all violence.
Yeah.
You know, taxing us the way they do and putting us into a state of hardship where we've got to work our whole lives just to keep our head above water, this is violence.
Mm.
You know, it's economic violence. It's emotional violence. It's a loss of our lives. It's harvesting who we are.
Yeah.
Like I said before, that's what they harvest is you. That is the main resource is humanity, and what they want is your soul. They want you to be walking in between these lines and doing what you're told and never stepping outside of the box, you know, and you never discover yourself that way. You're never able to be yourself that way. And that's what this whole system's about, and that in itself is violence. You know?
Sure. Max, I really thank you for your time today. It's been a pleasure having you on Capricorn TV.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for asking me on.